off the ball rugby.
There was a goal in the two teams, and that was the most disheartening thing. And does that mean that Leicester can't come back? No, of course, like, of course they can rebuild, but the mountain is bigger than it's ever been.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening and welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock this evening. We've got full live match commentary from the Aviva Stadium for tonight's show. It is the Republic of Ireland against Qatar with Stephen Doyle and Stewie Byrne, and commentary kickoff in the game is at 7:45. We'll bring you the team news on that in just a moment. We do have a news round for you over the next 20 minutes or so. We have Eve Conway here in studio. Eve, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Very well. And Arthur O'Dea is here as well. Evening, Arthur.
Hello.
So this Ireland team, I mean, if I had to ask you straight off the top of the show here, how many changes since the Grenada game, Arthur, would you be able to tell me?
I don't know.
Eight changes.
Okay.
From a quick piece of arithmetic. It's Caoimhín Kelleher in goal. It's a very strong Ireland team. Caoimhín Kelleher in goal. It's a back five of Seamus Coleman, Jacob Bryan, O'Shea, Collins, Scales. So back to the first choice back five that obviously was unavailable in Prague. It looks like Malumbi and Jamie McGrath making up the midfield with Ogbené and Jack Moylan behind Troy Parrott in attack. So, you know, are we saying maybe eight of Ireland's first choice players in that starting team at the moment? Certainly, I mean, you could make a strong case for that. So it's an exciting enough lineup in the context of how exciting a Republic of Ireland team can be. And I guess when you've got paying fans going along to the Aviva Stadium tonight, there was one last chance before the end of the season for Hamer to put out something resembling his best team.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting what way it kind of resolves itself. Because it's obviously far different evening in mind for Qatar than for us.
They are going to the World Cup.
Yeah. So they have different plans. So I don't know. Are you excited about that team?
I'm excited about Jack Moylan.
Okay.
I'm always excited to see Chidozie Ogbené play. Always excited to see Troy Parrott play. Tony, your question, I would suggest that I would be wrong to think there should be more experimentation.
You don't want to be... It's a serious game, like insofar as it's a game of professional football. Like, you don't want to be, you can't be taking the mickey with it. Like, but I wouldn't have minded something a bit different. Like,
okay.
I don't know.
Like what? What? Like, what, different personnel?
Well, even the, it seems shape wise, like, so it's five at the back again. We're locked into that.
We're locked in on that, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's open for debate?
I think there's room for manoeuvre.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of test the waters with something else, maybe. I mean, it just feels like for when we ended, like, the last situation, I mean, the Prague thing is kind of the last game of serious significance, I guess. And while they came so close, it did sort of feel like also that it was kind of, you get yourself 2-0 up in a game and you have no idea how to close it out, right? So you can look at that whatever kind of ways you want to look at it. It's like, yeah, you got yourself 2-0 up away from home. That's amazing. This system's working fantastically. It just needs a few tweaks. Or, oh, you got yourself 2-0 up. Brilliant. Why were you not able to close that out? And is there a chance then that it had something, I guess, not necessarily to do with the personnel, but to do with the system, the shape you have there that made you vulnerable to getting kind of pulled back into a game that you were, for all intents and purposes, in control of? I don't have the answer to that. Obviously, Hamer Hallgrimsson's sticking with it.
The formation is not the reason why Ireland conceded those two goals.
Is it the reason they went 2-0 up?
Well, the second was a set piece, first was a penalty, and the penalty comes as a result of Nathan Collins getting forward. Does Nathan Collins get forward because he knows he's got four of the defenders at the other end of the pitch? Like, the answer to your question is no, but, like, giving the point of view of why five at the back is the way to go, then I think the good things were more associated with the formation than the bad things that night. I think this is the way that Ireland need to be set up.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not, but I wouldn't mind it trying something else in a game where the result is inconsequential.
And I feel like it's since it's an international friendly, which you don't really have that many of nowadays with the Nations League. There's a lot more kind of matches that mean more. So was this a fixture where you could have gone, okay, let's try and change a few things or tweak a few things? But it's as you said, Owen, a very strong team.
Yeah, the opportunity for experimentation was in Murcia against Grenada.
Yeah.
And, I fear... that's when he threw caution to the wind with his lineup.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to speak too much on the quality of opposition there, but I'm not sure Ireland are going to come up against many Grenada-esque teams in the next few years.
But is the point not that this is a friendly? Like, if it is a testing ground for your real competitive fixtures, you need to be playing in the formation that
you know
you're
how
going
to do that.
What?
They know how to do that. But they've done it. That's my point.
They haven't perfected it though.
What does perfected mean? Like that? What?
Get better at it.
But like get okay. So yeah, I still think there's
these are preparatory fixtures for games that are coming down the line. I know we're not going to a World Cup, but there will still be times coming down the line. I know it doesn't seem like it because we're still in a very dark place when it comes to the Republic of Ireland national men's football team.
Yes.
But believe it or not, there will be a competitive fixture at some stage in the future that we will all care about.
Okay.
And you have to think about them in every single game that you play. Everything, that has to be your singular focus. As manager of this team, everything has to go towards that North Star of Ireland's next competitive fixture.
I get you. I'm with you 100%. But for to your reading of it, I'm aware, like, we're not saying everything hinges on a system. It's not like, oh, they're playing five at the back and that's so rigid. Like, there's so much fluidity in all these types of things. But I would gather then from your thinking that over the course of the last campaign, which kind of started disastrously, ended really well, even the result, like a 2-0, 2-2 away from Czech Republic and Czechia any other time is an amazing result. You'd suggest then that that's all moving in an upward trend.
Yes.
And you wouldn't be taking the thing as a whole. You wouldn't take like the really poor result at home to Hungary where it was like they battered us and then got a man sent off, or Armenia,
where,
like,
yeah,
they battered us and then got a man sent off.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see them more as indicative of maybe this doesn't work all the time. Maybe it's good for kind of backs against the wall result games where the two games where we delivered the most was where you had to deliver in Portugal and Hungary, where you're like, no option, this is do or die. Mm-hmm. And it delivered then. But in the games where we had to take some ownership over it, we failed to meet the standards that I suspect that we'd all would expect. That you'd like beaten, we bet Armenia at home, but not in a way I think that we could be happy with.
The last three competitive games Ireland have played, they've beaten Portugal.
Yeah.
They've beaten Hungary.
Yeah.
And they were 2-0 up against Czechia away from home.
Absolutely.
So I think, sure, there's a bit of recency bias at play there, but it's still three games worth of recency bias, three competitive games worth of recency bias. I would also say there's a bit of confirmation bias at play here as well, because I was always of the belief that because of the type of player that the Republic of Ireland has, lots of centre-backs, lots of full-backs, even though the full-back thing is dwindling at the moment, getting more of those players onto the pitch always seemed like sound logic to me. And so there's, as I say, a bit of confirmation bias on that. But I think the proof, insofar as we can use three games for proof, is in the pudding.
I think it's a dangerous precedent because it's not like for like. So when Ireland started off against Hungary in that first game, both teams, I'm pretty sure that was the first game for all. So everyone's starting off on an even keel. Mm-hmm. And by the time you say you get to the Portugal game, Portugal don't need to win. We need to win. And it's not that that won't happen again or come in different ways like that. But the fact of the matter is, how do we get better at imposing ourselves at the start of groups when it's even and it's not, there's not circumstances that come into play? How do we get into a circumstance where we don't need to have a Troy Parrott moment in Budapest to get through? Like, you know, because you can't really bank on that. That's not something that's replicable necessarily.
No.
So my point is that over the course of the whole campaign, I don't think you could look back and say Ireland played really well throughout. The result was fantastic and what they did was fantastic in the circumstances. You don't really want to be in those circumstances.
Yeah.
And I hear this an awful lot, funnily enough, with England now going to the World Cup, where it's like some people are giving out about, oh, you're not bringing Foden. You want someone to come on and do something in the game. It's like, why don't we think of it a different way? It's like, why don't we just control a game and not need someone to come on and do something about it?
Yeah, but so, look, yeah.
My point, that could be with five, but I find it strange that there's such little experimentation that you're kind of going like, now what we have here, we have something here that's working, because over the course of even a full campaign, it sort of worked. It worked out, but I wouldn't say it worked. It's a niche enough thing. It's a nuanced enough thing. And I appreciate some people may say, that's stupid. You got to a playoff. But like, again, I look back, that Armenia home game was so bad. Mm-hmm. They get a man sent off. Hungary at home, so bad. They get a man sent off. Mm-hmm. Portugal away was actually not too bad. And they got there in the end. But you just want, like, how do we impose ourselves on teams more than just being kind of put to the pin of our collar every time and being forced to react? How do we act? And I don't know if that's the most actionable formation.
Okay.
If you get me.
Yeah.
That's what would worry me.
Eve, shall we get into some audio from the team? Like, I mean, we should say it's a very youthful squad, even though there's lots of experience in that starting 11. So do you want to put some meat in the bone of what we've been hearing from the Ireland camp?
Yeah, so it may be a familiar starting 11, but there are a number of new faces on the team sheet tonight for the Republic of Ireland. Manager Hemo Helgensen has selected Ed McGinty, Conor Brann, Corey Ndaba and Mason Melia on the bench this evening. And Seamus Coleman was speaking earlier this week about the youthful nature of this camp.
Yeah, it's funny because the manager put up some profiles of staff and players yesterday and the date of birth beside it, and I was like, oh my god, I couldn't believe it. But I love it, I love getting to know them, I love trying to help them in any way, but yeah, these are the lads now that are trying to help keep me young, because you're still competing and you're still trying to keep up the pace with them. But it's great to see so many young faces in the squad, and I'm sure that'll help us a lot in the future going down the line when they get some experience with the team.
We will be checking in with Stewie Byrne and Stephen Doyle before kickoff as well in around 10 minutes time. But elsewhere today, Eve, there's been a big upset at Roland Garros.
There has. So Yannick Sinner is out of the French Open in the second round. The world number one was two sets up against Argentina's Juan Manuel Serrano before feeling dizzy and sick on court. Temperatures were in the mid-30s in Paris today. And Serrano ultimately won in five sets, 3-6, 2-6, 7-5, 6-1, 6-1. And it's the first time since the year 2000 when Andre Agassi lost in round two that the men's number one has lost this early on in Paris.
Yeah, so the fascinating thing here is that himself and Alcaraz, who's obviously out through injury, are both out at this stage. So the last time that you had a winner that wasn't Alcaraz or Sinner was obviously Novak Djokovic. So there could be a different name in the mix here as well. You were watching a good bit of this, Eve. What had actually happened here?
So Sinner in the third set, I think, was 5-1 up, kind of looking pretty set on to win. And it was unusual that he was even playing that early on Chatre on the main court. In French Open, the men's usually are in the afternoon or the evening sessions. And the heat just seemed to really get to him, felt very sick, felt very dizzy. And then I think he tried to get through the next two sets, but it just, so many balls, not even making it over the net, many misplaced shots. It really, and listen, Sinner's played a lot of tennis this year, kind of the exact opposite of Alcaraz, who has been injured since April. Like, Sinner's gone on and completed all the Masters 1000s events, heading into the French Open as like the overwhelming favourite. But now with Alcaraz out and Sinner out, it really opens up the men's draw in a way that we haven't seen in around maybe 2 or 3 years now. You've Djokovic looking for his 25th Grand Slam. You've maybe Zverev looking if he can win his first. You've Casper Ruud, who's won twice now, have been runner-up twice now at Roland Garros, all kind of probably thinking, this is the best chance I'll have for not only this year, but probably for the rest of my career.
Definitely. He'd won 30 matches in a row, hadn't lost since February. And not a great look. I try to tell people that gingers can handle the heat. But Yannick Sinner goes out of his way to disprove me time and time again. There's some other big news here, a potentially surprising return for the grass court season.
Yeah, so 23-time Grand Slam champion Serena Williams is considering a competitive return to tennis next month at Queen's. She's 44 years old and retired 4 years ago, but she could come back to play doubles with 19-year-old Canadian star Victoria Mboko, who's currently ranked 9 in the world. Now, she would need a wild card, but there are two available. And I think Queens would find it pretty hard to turn down a wild card for Serena Williams.
Yeah, it's a wild story.
It's like, all due credit to her, like, she's a phenomenon, whatever. That's old.
It is.
By any measure.
I was at the Madrid Open last month and I saw Venus Williams playing doubles with Katie Bolter. She's a year older than Serena, so she's 45. And it was fantastic getting to see someone of her stature and caliber playing tennis, but it did feel a wee bit like an exhibition match. They won. Okay.
Yeah.
But it would be a nice story, but I don't think they're going to go and win the doubles at Queen's.
Let's move on to the rugby because we've got some pretty interesting audio here from Leo Cullen. So what have we got? Kieran Frawley out for Leinster is the top line.
Yeah, so he's not been selected for Leinster's squad for the URC quarterfinal against the Lions this Saturday. Leo Cullen has made 8 changes from the loss in the Champions Cup final. And speaking today, Cullen said it was important to get a balance across the squad.
And is there a reason you went for Harry over Frawley on the bench, or is that just how it fell this week?
Exactly. So, listen, Harry's been very good over the course of this campaign as well. So, but we think we've got a strong group across the board. Some guys drop out. A few guys, as I said, Barry Bangs and Knox. See, Tommy O'Brien drops out. Gary Ringrose drops out. Ron Keller drops out. So, I don't think who else we got there. Jack Cohn, another one as well. And then we've tried to freshen things up by putting a few guys on the bench. So, and hopefully they will give that level of required experience later in the game as well. That listen, hopefully we can get this job done. But as I said, listen, the Lions are a serious team. Even I know we played them a few weeks ago, and the scoreline is 31-7. But listen, it was 14-7 for a huge part of that game. And even the following week, their game finished about 24-17 against Munster. And listen, they had Munster keeping them pinned back their ends, keeping them in those exit cycles. So they're very effective in terms of the way they play the game. So it's trying to get a balance across the team always here. So it might not, listen, first look into some people. Yeah, of course you might pick some other team, but listen, there's lots of other factors that we'll be looking at here.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Like, he has obviously necessarily changed the squad since Bilbao last week, because like there's no doubt who Leo Cullen and his coaching ticket believe to be their first choice nine, for example, and James Gibson-Park is on the bench. But it's the fact that Frawley's out of the squad entirely. And that was a big talking point. One of the big talking points coming away from Spain last week was that Kieran Frawley looks like the most informed number 10 in Leinster at the moment. So to leave him out for a quarterfinal, it's not quite flying as close to the fire as leaving Jordy Barrett out of a European Cup semi-final. But you're taking a little bit of a risk if people can see right in front of them that one of your best players in that position is not in your 23.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, for the guys who even come in. Even I think Prendergast starting. So
Prendergast starting.
So it's like, even for him, it's like, how's he feeling about it? Because he must see, obviously he wasn't picked the last effort through circumstance, merit, his versatility, whatever else. And now you're back in. You're like, I'd just love to know when he was informed of that decision and how he knows it to be. Like, does he understand that it's kind of, it's all a bit strange? I mean, it's, by the same token, I kind of get it. It's like, well, there's no, like to your point with the Hamer thing of prep Aaron and kind of looking ahead, it's like there's not really that much point in like sticking with things. Like,
I mean, I know the URC is diminished by a lot of people, but it is more important than
of course it is. But I'm just saying he has to be in some ways thinking about next season already.
Yeah,
he appreciates that.
There's another clip here from Leo on a developing story here on James Lowe as well, Eve.
Yeah, so James Lowe returns for Leinster this weekend after missing out on selection for the Champions Cup final last Saturday. This will be Lowe's 100th appearance for the province, and he is level on 69 tries with Shane Horgan, with one more being enough to make him Leinster's record try scorer. He has yet to agree a contract extension with Leinster, and head coach Leo Cullen has said he is reluctant to discuss what goes on behind closed doors.
So listen, it's up to all the individual cases. Things play out behind closed doors because it's people's, that's their livelihood. It's their, people make decisions all the time. It's the nature of the business that we're in. I know there's great intrigue in some of the individuals within that, which is, it's understandable, of course, because there's fans and people want to know what's happening. But unfortunately, like, until the individuals decide that certain announcements take place, then like it's their business. So listen, I hope you understand why I'm coming with that angle on this specific case.
We are pretty much out of time on tonight's news, John. Just to let you know, in terms of some other news today, Steve Clark, he signed a new deal to remain as head coach of Scotland until the 2030 World Cup. We've got news on Neymar's injury. He's expected to be out of action for 2 to 3 weeks after scans revealed a muscle tear in his calf. And then, Eve, finally we have the latest on the cricket.
Yeah, so it was a busy day for Irish cricket. The Ireland men's cricketers, they were all out for 179 on the second day of their test against New Zealand. and heading into the second innings trailed by 262 runs, and New Zealand enforced the follow-on, which meant that Ireland were batting again immediately. And then in the women's, they were also in action on the first day of the T20 Tri-Nation Series, but the West Indies won by 8 wickets with 51 balls remaining.
Eve Conway, thank you very much for Thursday night's News Round. Arthur, thank you for popping into studio, Eve.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.